Hi, this is Bill Condon. Recently wrote this screenplay for Chicago.
So what's up with gay men in musicals?
Oh God, how long do we have? And all that jazz! The Mattachine Society, soon after the Kinsey report came out, they said, well, what are we going to do about it? There are more of us than we thought.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Australian Senate supports equality for queer military spouses, Swedish embassies prep for partner registration, and Chicago's storyteller sings about the Velvet Mafia and his next sexy tale. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 8, 2003. Australia's National Senate this week approved a resolution calling for equal benefits for the same-gender partners of gay and lesbian service members. The resolution was introduced by openly gay Australian Democratic Party Senator from West Australia, Brian Gregg, who said that while it didn't change the law, it put pressure on the government to do so. His party was joined in supporting it by the Australian Labor Party, although the ruling coalition opposed it. The resolution is part of a continuing national campaign for equal military partner benefits, including a number of actions as the nation celebrated Australia Day in January. The Australian Defence Force formally lifted its ban on military service by gays and lesbians more than a decade ago. But although gay and lesbian service members can list their partners as next of kin, those partners still do not qualify for spousal benefits, including housing benefits, relocation expenses, grief counseling, death benefits compensation, or survivors' pensions.
Sweden's government this week announced plans to register its citizens' gay and lesbian partnerships at its embassies that perform heterosexual marriages. Foreign Minister Anna Lindh told Sweden's parliament, "It is very important for Sweden for civil servants who officiate at weddings to be authorized also to officiate at the registration of partnerships. Once we have established that a country accepts partnership registration, we will begin to authorize our civil servants at those embassies." 21 Swedish embassies now perform marriages, and arrangements will first be made with 8 of the nations that host them, likely including France, Portugal, and Israel.
But hopes for civil marriages are fading in Israel, where currently only Orthodox Jewish rabbis can marry even heterosexual couples. The Shinui Party has broken its campaign promises by dropping its support for the Labor Party's civil marriage bill, apparently as part of negotiations in forming a governing coalition with the conservative establishment. Gay and lesbian couples led a protest demonstration outside the Knesset last week, releasing hundreds of balloons to symbolize Shinui's airy promises blowing away.
And a bill to reserve legal marriage exclusively for heterosexual couples has been introduced in the Parliament of American Samoa. It's sponsored by Representative Suak Carl Schuster.
Scotland, too, is gearing up for a struggle over legal recognition of unmarried couples, including gay and lesbian couples. At their party convention this week, the opposition Liberal Democrats overwhelmingly adopted registered partnerships as a plank in their campaign platform for Scottish Parliament elections in May. Partnered gay delegate Richard Coxon waved his supermarket membership card as he told the convention, "The state does not give me anything to prove we are a partnership, but Tesco does. This is a joint card. If I want to prove we are in a settled relationship, I have to get Tesco to do it. This is lunacy." The Christian group Evangelical Alliance immediately vowed to mount a major campaign against what it called a false image of marriage to make it a key issue in the elections. The proposed registry would carry legal status equal to marriage in areas including employment, pensions, property, taxation, immigration, inheritance, adoption, and fostering.
Denmark's government has green-lighted fostering by gays and lesbians, but rejected a move to allow them to adopt children from other countries. Those are the positions of the Minister for Social Affairs, as reported by the Copenhagen Post. The head of Denmark's national gay and lesbian group LBL, Peter Andersen, responded that, "It seems rather odd that the minister feels homosexuals can be trusted with other people's children, but are not good enough to look after their own." Although Denmark became the first nation in the world to legally recognize same-gender couples well over a decade ago, LBL says it now lags far behind other European Union member nations.
As South Africa's Constitutional Court heard arguments last week in the unusual case of a lesbian couple who are both biological parents of their twins, the judges criticized the government more generally for dragging its feet on legal recognition of same-gender couples. In the case before the court, the women known as J and B used sperm from an anonymous donor for in vitro fertilization of an egg one donated and the other carried to term. The Durban High Court in November affirmed that they should both be named as mothers on the twins' birth certificates and declared unconstitutional the current law preventing that. South Africa's constitution was the first in the world to explicitly protect gays and lesbians from discrimination. Last month, the government decided to drop its opposition to the women's claim, but last week, government attorneys formally asked the Constitutional Court for a year's delay in implementing the legal change to allow the parliament to make the amendment. Judge Laurie Ackerman scoffed at the request, noting the government has failed to take action on the legal status of same-gender couples despite a series of legal judgments beginning in 1999. Other Constitutional Court judges supported Ackerman's contention that the issue urgently needs the government's attention. The court itself reserved judgment on both the Durban ruling and the government request for a stay.
U.S. courts and legislatures were also busy with gay and lesbian family issues this week. A federal appeals court heard a legal challenge to Florida's ban on adoptions by gays and lesbians, while Massachusetts' highest state court heard a lawsuit seeking to open legal marriage to same-gender couples. Neither ruling is expected for several months. In Florida, a group is petitioning legislators to repeal the ban before the court issues its decision, while in Massachusetts, Democratic Speaker of the House Thomas Finneran promised an amendment to the state constitution to prohibit gay and lesbian marriages should the court find in their favor.
In Texas, where same-gender marriages and their recognition are explicitly banned, a trial court judge granted a divorce decree to a gay male couple who'd contracted a Vermont civil union. Those unions are generally not recognized by other states, and last year a Connecticut appeals court rejected one man's bid to dissolve his.
Also in Texas, Houston's Klein Independent School District agreed to formation of a gay-straight alliance at Klein High School, settling a federal lawsuit brought by student Marla Dukler with the help of the American Civil Liberties Union. While the agreement preserves the district's policy requiring written parental consent for participation, Dukler said that all 16 students wishing to join the club had obtained it.
In California, a state appeals court reversed a trial court's dismissal to reinstate a San Diego lesbians discrimination lawsuit. Guadalupe Benitez was denied artificial insemination services by doctors at the North Coast Women's Care Medical Group, she claims, because of their religious objections. Benitez had to go elsewhere and pay for the service, which her health plan would have covered at that clinic. Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund, which is representing Benitez, said the ruling is the first of its kind in the U.S. to say that health care providers cannot discriminate against patients based on sexual orientation.
The California state agency overseeing adoptions and foster care has ordered a Santa Ana-based private agency to stop discriminating against gays and lesbians. The state's Community Care Licensing Division ordered Olive Crest Foster Family and Adoption Agency to develop a non-discriminatory recruitment policy. In doing so, the state upheld a claim by lesbian couple Dr. Shannon Rose and Jane Brooks that Olive Crest had deliberately stalled in processing their application to adopt. Rose and Brooks may also take their case to court.
Last week, a federal jury in Maryland rejected a San Francisco man's claim of discrimination against the Maryland Shock Trauma Center for denying him visitation with his now-deceased registered partner. Bill Flanagan had a power of attorney for health care for his late partner, Robert Daniel, but was unable to obtain any information about his status from the center for 4 hours until Daniel's mother and sister arrived. Lambda Legal Defense is likely to appeal on his behalf.
An Iowa bill to explicitly prohibit gay and lesbian couples from adopting or fostering children has died for this legislative session. Although a state Senate committee had considered the much-protested bill last month, it took no vote, and now Republican Senate Majority Leader Stuart Iverson has told reporters that it will neither advance to the floor nor be reintroduced.
Also dead for the year is the gay-inclusive hate crimes bill that surprisingly passed the Utah State House last week, only to be immediately voted to be reconsidered. This week, its sponsor, Democratic representative from Salt Lake City David Litvak, chose to let it die quietly rather than see it be defeated after what he feared would be a divisive and ugly debate. Litvak promised to reintroduce the measure next year, although 2004 elections may make passage still more difficult.
But the Hawaii State Senate this week approved a bill to add gender identity and expression as a category protected under that state's hate crime law. All 20 Democrats supported the measure, joined by only two Republican senators. The bill moves next to the Hawaii House.
And finally, cricket's World Cup tournament included Zimbabwe, despite some protests against human rights violations by its notoriously homophobic president, Robert Mugabe. The event opened last month in Cape Town with a globally televised ceremony in which each of the 14 teams was led onto the field by a model. It emerged only last week that the beautiful Barbara Diop, who marched at the head of Zimbabwe's own team, is a trans woman.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending March 8th, 2003, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Greg Gordon. Without a doubt, the 75th Annual Academy Awards will be one of the gayest Oscar nights in history. Almost every major category has a nominated film that includes a gay or lesbian character, features a gay actor, or is brought to life by a gay screenwriter, producer, or director. In the past few months, This Way Out's Steve Pride has explored several of the Oscar-nominated films, including Frida, Far From Heaven, and The Hours. So how can we forget the blockbuster movie rendition of the famous Broadway musical Chicago from out gay screenwriter Bill Condon? He's already taken Oscar home for his Gods and Monsters script about the life of eccentric gay director James Whale. Now, with clips from his latest triumph, Condon chats with Pride about Chicago, gay men and show tunes, sexologist Alfred Kinsey, and all that jazz.
5, 6, 7, 8.
After writing and directing Gods and Monsters, Bill Condon did not seem like the obvious choice to pen the script for Chicago. But the film has revived the entire musical genre, and critics across the country agree his adaptation is nothing short of brilliant. And just in case you're one of the few people who haven't seen the film version of Chicago, it's the story of an ambitious showgirl, Roxy Hart, who lies to her meek husband, shoots her no-good lover, and retains lawyer Billy Flynn to get her off. But in the end, it's all about fame, not freedom, when Roxy thinks fellow inmate Velma Kelly is getting more than her share of the tabloid press.
I didn't actually do anything wrong.
I don't need to tell me, honey. I ain't never heard of a man getting killed when he didn't get just what was coming to him.
Hey, Mama! Come here.
Velma Kelly? You're the Velma Kelly.
You know, I was there that night. I was there the night that you got arrested.
Yeah, you and half of Chicago.
Look at this, Mama. An editorial denouncing me in Red Book magazine. Not in memory do we recall so fiendish and horrible a double homicide.
Maybe you couldn't buy that kind of publicity.
Hi, this is Bill Condon. Recently wrote this screenplay for Chicago.
So what's up with gay men in musicals?
Oh, God, how long do we have? I've been asked that a lot, actually, recently, Advocate and all those places, and it's hard not to come up with cliche answers about that, about escapism and fantasy and all that stuff. But I just can't help but think that it has a lot to do with joy, you know, a certain joyousness that is expressed in musicals at their best. I don't know why, but I know for myself, I responded to it at a very early age. And it was weird because my mother had always loved musicals so much. I did. And then it was interesting. My sister had a son about 20 years ago, and he was suddenly seeing the Harvey Girls at age 4 and obsessed with The Sound of Music at age 5 and asking for Maria's bonnet at Christmas and then opening it and saying, Maria would never wear this. And, you know, and it was so hard not to think this little boy is going to turn out to be gay, which he turned out to be. So these cliches, there is some truth to them. You know, he discovered the joys of musicals very early on. I got to tell you, it's so thrilling to hear that the CD is number two in the Billboard charts. The fact that people are buying show tunes just amazes me. When I was a kid, in the late 60s, we would go to see these roadshow musicals, starting with Sound of Music up to Hello, Dolly and things like that. And it was all these Christmas movies, you know, and you'd wait a long time to see them and you get your reserved tickets and the album would come out first. And it was a real kind of ritual of the holiday season to have these movies around, Funny Girl and Oliver. And I have to say, I've had a bit of nostalgia during this whole Chicago experience. The fact that it played exclusively at the Ziegfeld in New York and people would line up in the snow waiting to get in, you know, and again, this CD kind of becoming this popular thing. And there are kids, I'm sure, getting the CD and then sort of imagining what the movie is and then going to see it. And I think that's exciting.
So you were one of those kids that would bring home the cast album of Mary Poppins or...
Right. I don't know about that one.
Dance
yeah.
around the living room.
And... Yeah. Yeah, probably. Yes.
Mama's good to you.
Chicago seems to prove, while there may not be a velvet mafia, there are at least a few openly gay men in show business. Among the out gay members of the Chicago team are director-choreographer Rob Marshall and executive producers Neil Marin and Craig Zaden. Miramax, the studio releasing the film, has not been shy in promoting that angle.
Because so many people involved in the movie come from the theater, and I think in the theater especially, it's just been nobody's bothered to hide that stuff for a very long time. You know, I think it's just second nature to everybody to not even pretend that there's anything. But it was interesting to see the Miramax publicity department fighting for articles in Out and Genre and The Advocate and hoping to get a cover and all of that stuff. And it's been great how everybody's been so supportive of the gay press with this movie because it's a good audience, you know, and that's the great power of it, that there is a loyal gay audience that they know adds up to a lot of money. So they went after it.
One of the stumbling blocks that kept Chicago from getting made years ago was the problem of how to transition it to film. Not only did Condon resolve that problem, but this is one of those rare movies where everything you see on screen was actually on the page.
Well, I think that's true to a degree, but I won't say I'll take credit for all that because it was a very organic process. That's what I loved about it. It was so different from any other movie I've ever been involved with because, you know, it started with the script, and that is the same typical thing. You're alone in a room, and then I would share it with Rob, and we'd talk about it. And then the table just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. First, it was the team of choreographers, and then it was the designers, and then obviously the actors and the dancers. And so you're constantly refining things, you know, these transitions back and forth. And sometimes the DP will have the great idea for how to really get into one number and stuff like that, and then that gets reflected on the page. But because musicals are so pre-planned, obviously the actors have to have their performances in place so that then they can go in and record these songs. So much of it is planned out before that it really is all on the page before. I kind of got a feeling of what it might have been like to have written a Hitchcock movie when I did this because there was actually very little to do or that needed changing once we started shooting. And in fact, in post, it very much followed the script.
The film version of Chicago has been accused of being less gay than the Broadway musical. For instance, reporter Mary Sunshine, one of the great drag roles of the stage, is played in the film by Christine Baranski. And the character of matron Mama Morton, as played by Queen Latifah, seems a little more sexually ambiguous.
You know, Chicago is a series of vaudeville numbers, and it really was heartbreaking to lose the drag number. There's no question. It just is that within the conceit of the movie, which intercut reality with fantasy, just selling Nathan Lane in a dress, we just somehow didn't believe it was going to work. And it kind of undercut the reality of the film. So that was a shame, you know. And in fact, there was a version of Class that didn't make it into the film where we were going to do Latifah in drag as a piano player, which would have answered your second question. In terms of that, I don't think she's sexually ambiguous. I mean, I don't think there's any question that when she's slapping those girls' thighs or pushing back Roxy's hair, what she's interested in. On stage, there's a little more of Hey Diesel and stuff like that. And I think, again, because we wanted just this modicum of reality, you know, that does play into such prison movie cliches, you know, that we just wanted to suggest it and not sort of highlight it for no reason of being afraid of it, obviously. It was just sort of a different kind of taste about that stuff and feeling that Chicago is a little bit of its time, you know, and even in the monologue, which we fooled around with changing, then finally left in, where one of the cell block husbands goes to find himself and finds Ruth and Irving, you know, and that was a huge joke in 1975. And later on, it's a little bit sort of the naughtiness of those little gay things. They're not as fresh, I think.
I loved Al Lipschitz more than I could possibly say. He was a real artistic guy, sensitive, a painter. But he was always trying to find himself. He'd go out every night looking for himself, and on the way, he found Ruth, Gladys, Rosemary, and Irving. I guess you could say we broke up because of artistic differences. He saw himself as alive, and I saw him dead.
We are talking to Oscar-winning screenwriter Bill Condon.
Hi, this is Bill Condon. Knowledge is power, so stay informed by listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
Slick your hair and wear your buckle shoes. And all that jazz, I hear the...
There's something interesting going on in Chicago, I think, in the musical that's made it endure for so long. And it goes beyond these sort of more superficial issues of celebrity and notoriety and our legal institutions and all that. And that's the idea that everybody's got an act. I have an act here and you have your act there, you know. And, you know, in the show, Amos is somebody who doesn't know how to get his act across the footlights. Everyone sees through him because he doesn't know how to express himself. And the only other innocent in the show is the Hunyak, the Hungarian woman who gets hanged because she literally can't communicate because she doesn't speak the language. Everybody else sort of has a way to present themselves. And that's something I really wanted to explore even a little more in the screenplay. So early on, when Roxy is sort of laying out all of her dreams for Fred Casely, she says, you know, everybody's got a signature bit, and I thought my thing could be aloof. And she tries it on for a second, of course, and if you watch the movie, she's trying that on through the movie. Of course, she can't do aloof for more than 10 seconds without blowing it, you know, because suddenly she's there screaming at Amos or she gets distracted by other things. But it does feel to me, it's a very cynical point of view about the way we interact with each other, but I think it is something that people relate to on a kind of subconscious level. Like, what is my act? What is the song I'd be singing up there? You know, who'd be my vaudeville model? And I think it underlies the appeal of this show.
Do you recall the night of January 14th?
Uh-huh.
Could you tell the jury, in your own words, the happenings of that night?
When Fred came over, I told him my good news. That me and Amos were gonna have a baby. And then it was all over between us.
What happened then?
Well, then,
What did Casely say when you told him the news?
I'll kill you before I see you have another man's child.
Could you tell the audience, the jury, what happened next?
Well, in his passion, he tore off my robe and he threw me on the bed. And Mr. Hart's pistol was lying there between us.
And then?
And then we both reached for the gun, but I got it first. And then he came toward me with this funny look in his eyes. He was angry and wild.
Wild?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So it was his life or yours?
And not just mine. I closed my eyes and I shot.
In defense of your life.
My husband's innocent unborn child.
So what's Bill Condon doing next?
I'm actually doing a movie on Alfred Kinsey, the sex researcher, and we start shooting it in April. An amazing character who actually, obviously, you know, some people consider him the father of gay liberation because the Mattachine Society, Harry Hay got that group together for their first meeting soon after the Kinsey report came out, because it was obviously the first report that said that 1 in 10 men had had a significant homosexual relationship or encounter. And having read that, they said, well, what are we going to do about it? There are more of us than we thought. And obviously he was a great supporter of tolerance toward everybody, including homosexuals. And he was bisexual himself. So he's a fascinating guy. Liam Neeson is playing Alfred Kinsey and Laura Linney's playing his wife. And Ian McKellen's playing a contemporary character who kind of plays host to the whole movie. And a lot of young actors who we're talking to now to play the team that he traveled the country with, asking people about their sex lives in the 1930s and 1940s. There are so many ideas of his that are still so important, I think, and kind of revolutionary, you know, that it'll be fun to kind of take a look at them again. For example, I did ask this one acolyte of his who's still alive what Kinsey would have thought of gay liberation, you know, and gay movement or whatever. And he said, well, actually, he probably would have been a little horrified by it. And I asked him why, and he said, you know, for him, true freedom was individuality, because He'd spent the first 20 years of his life as a biologist studying gall wasps, these little creatures that are smaller than ants, and he examined over a million of them, collected them, and found that not one was the same in any sort of set of characteristics. And applied that idea to sexuality, that when you take people's sex histories, inevitably at the end of it, they would say, well, am I normal? You know, that desperately we all want to know that. And what he discovered is that there is no normal. Everybody's sexuality is different in one way or another. You know, it's not whether you like boys or girls, but how often you like to do it and when you like to do it and what you like to do. And of course, it changes over the years, too. So it is a completely individual thing. And so he felt that and you can see this somehow, you know, that now when so many people are out, you know, and I understand this a bit, getting back to our initial discussion, you know, about that nervousness about committing to being gay when actually you might have more diverse interests. It's wonderful that people can talk about these things and talk about being gay, but it can sometimes provide its own straitjacket too for people, I think. And I do think there's something more wonderful if that whole perception that we are somewhere on a scale, one side being exclusively gay, one side being exclusively straight, but that a lot of people are somewhere in the middle, would be the really, really exciting idea for everybody to embrace.
Yeah, the gay movement doesn't leave a lot of room for bisexuality, it seems. The Anne Heche's and the Julie Cyphers just get crucified in the gay press.
Yeah, I think it's a shame. I think it's probably because we all know that for so long bisexuality was just a kind of cover for homosexuality, you know, and I think that's been true, or it's sort of a stop on the way to coming out. But still, it does exist, and there are people who are very happily bisexual, you know, and in a weird way, you feel that they're the people who are somewhat disenfranchised right now because no one really trusts them, you know, no one really believes what they say.
Ready for the last question?
Okay.
Do you think there is a gay male artistic sensibility?
I would think so. How else to explain Bea Arthur? No, I won't say that.
She's a gay man.
No, forget that one. You're always a little nervous saying that because obviously gay does cover the entire spectrum. But I think there's a specific thing you're talking about. There's a specific delight in camp and a certain kind of wit in characters that you see sort of all over television now and in movies and in ways that aren't identified necessarily as being gay. Annie Mame is the great example of that, just something that is just suffused with the gay sensibility without there being any gay characters. And I think there's Annie Mame and there's Will and Grace, and there's not that big a difference. There is a certain kind of appreciation for irony and camp and a certain kind of wit that I think you'd have to admit is gay.
This has been a conversation with director and Oscar-winning writer Bill Condon. Chicago is a Miramax release. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
You can like the life you're living, you can live the life you like, you can even marry.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, Chris Ambage, Martin Rice, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KAZU Pacific Grove, California, WWUH West Hartford, Connecticut, 3PVR Urambot, Victoria, and more than 135 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, will everyone please stay tuned?